time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Welcome in to Vanessa and Gallant, little Thursday edition, and it is draft day.
Draft day.
Which you love.
I hate the build-up to the draft. I'm not going to lie. I just do not like it in any way, shape, or form. I'm tired of all the mock drafts. I'm tired of everybody thinking that they have a clue as to what these guys are going to do. I just want to see who the Texans are going to pick. That's it.
You are not alone in that. There are a lot of people that the build-up of the draft, all of the predictions bother them.
You're trying to squeeze as much content as you possibly can, building up to an event that's 3 days long.
Hashtag content.
But it's funny because, you know, you're talking about, what, 256 picks total or so, and there's a lot of people that think, oh, you got to do this. You don't. But guess what? I'm glad that it actually is here. I do find watching the draft to be extremely entertaining. I don't think it's remotely close when it comes to the NBA draft. Obviously, baseball's draft is a drip. This draft is fun. So I can't wait for it to get started. I just want it to get started.
I think it's funny, too, when you talk about baseball and the other drafts, like when those draft days pop up, I don't know about you, but I'm often like, oh, God, I forgot that was tonight. Right?
Yes.
With the NFL draft, you very, very, very much know because they start promoting it the minute the NFL combine ends.
They get a pool noodle and they bash your face with it for months. And then it happens and you figure out who the hell the future of the NFL is.
Should be fun. After 2 years of talking about it, the NFL draft is lit in Vegas. The fan experience opens up at noon. Fountains of Bellagio. Red carpet activities at 1:45 p.m.
See, like,
it gets better. NFL draft at the Draft Theater beginning, of course, at 5 p.m. and a Weezer concert at 9 p.m.
Oh,
this is according
cool.
to Mick Akers from Sports Business and Transportation.
I like the Weezer concert.
Oh, I love it.
The Blue Album's a great album, but there's a red carpet. I don't want to sound like an old man.
You do,
one
but it's
minute
okay.
into the show,
we need
but
to curb
whatever.
Your enthusiasm
whatever.
For music.
I'm just going to go forward into the abyss and say it. You get to watch a bunch of young kids that are experimenting with fashion, and I don't care. I know that some people do. They're trying to turn the NFL draft into a "this is for everybody" kind of event. I'm glad that they've gone away from making every single draft pick a sob story. Talking about, like, something bad that happened.
Yeah, mom was on cocaine was an interesting graphic.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Never forget.
Right. Or broke his leg while riding his bicycle when he was 7. Like, they try to find some small story that they overcame. So, they're trying to make it for everybody. The red carpet, I can do without.
Meanwhile, the Astros getting the win last night. Stanek at the Disco. I saw that on Twitter from Apollo Houston, and I love it.
Well,
I'm for Stanek at the Disco.
I mean,
and if they put that on a shirt, I'm wearing it.
It was definitely the kind of experience that I get you would expect at a disco or a discotheque. Do discos exist? Does anyone call them discos? Is this just now a club?
Yeah, no. So I think that's a fair point. So I don't know what the qualification for
I remember
being
Panic
classified
at the Disco.
As a disco is.
Okay, good.
What a beautiful wedding.
I let you do the walk like an Egyptian dance.
No, it's the, staying alive. You know who we should have? We should, if John Granato's still in the building, have him come on and tell us what a disco.
He would know. We wouldn't. We don't know these things.
No.
So he made it interesting, Stanek.
He did.
So that's why you could say Stanek rhymes with panic, but okay, you've taken, at the very least, 2 games in this series against a Texas Rangers team that you're better than. Chaz McCormick started it off with a leadoff homer. You got a nice 3-run double from Kyle Tucker. Not as much offense as you'd want. Christian Javier had some struggles in the second inning, but a solid start. Got a bailout from Jordan Alvarez. This is what you expect against the Texas Rangers. So I'm looking back at last night, and I don't think there's anything you can really come out of it and say, all right, yeah, things are finally getting back on track offensively. I mean, it's still not as much as I would like to see, but So I suppose I just have to accept that this is the new reality, that the Astros are not going to be scoring 7-8 runs a night.
It's just not the sexy offense teams that we're used to with the Astros. But Yordan Alvarez, like you said, getting it done and them have, you know, one more run than the other team is enough to get the win.
That is true.
Justin Verlander on the mound tonight.
Okay.
It's today.
It's like baseball knew that no one's going to watch our games if we're on at the same time as the NFL draft. Although I know this is really just a travel day for the Astros. So, we'll see what Verlander's able to do, and they should take 3 of 4 from Texas. You can't tie series with losers. You can't do that. No, the only team that I feel like you should lose any series to over the course of the season is the Seattle Mariners. That's it. And wonder why.
Producer Noah is shaking his head in disgust.
Well, I'm just saying it from the perspective of, look, that
of the fact that they're actually good.
They're good. Yeah. The other teams in your division, I don't really feel it with the Los Angeles Angels.
Meanwhile, I want to point out, and our friends on Twitch can see this, Paul is rocking a really cool Houston Oilers kind of vintage three-quarters t-shirt. Why are you comfortable rocking the Houston Oilers when they move to Tennessee?
Because it's a Houston team.
So you're still good, because I know that you do not like the Tennessee Titans.
No, I remember perhaps mistakenly wearing this to the Texans-Titans game in week 18 of last year. And a bunch of people were like, yeah, you still support the Titans? And I said, nothing. I just continued to walk because I didn't want to engage these jabronis that for some reason live in Houston and still root for the Tennessee Titans. What is wrong with you? They're not even good. But no, I like the Houston Oilers look. I like the Houston Oilers history. It does belong to this city, of course.
It does.
And it's a good look. So I decided to rock it today. I have not, Vanessa, purchased any Houston Texans gear. Ever? No.
Really?
It doesn't look good.
Why is that?
Because it doesn't look good.
The color, is it the color scheme or the
no,
logo?
It's just like they don't have any good options. I mean, I know I sound essentially like a giant diva right now, but none of the shirts that they offer to me are worth buying. I want one that looks like it's kind of vintage, and they just all look the exact same.
Yeah, right. It's a new team. And the other thing, too, is the color scheme doesn't help. Red, white, and blue. It's a basic.
I hate America. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I'm sure you do. All right. Speaking of the Texans and the Titans, we loop back to the draft. What will they do tonight? This story from this morning made me giggle.
Ooh.
Because Las Vegas, you think the weather is going to be amazing. You picture this amazing draft by the fountains and the Bellagio and everything that comes with a draft being in Vegas. Like we said, there's a Weezer concert tonight, which will be fun. Tom Pelissero had to turn into a little bit of a meteorologist this morning. He and Peter Schrager on Good Morning Football were talking about the weather in Las Vegas.
Yeah, we've been busy, and Kay, we've already got a little curveball in the day one of the draft. We're inside right now. That's because it's incredibly windy outside, and those Bellagio fountains, they would be spraying everywhere all over us. Tom, what is the weather situation? We're talking weather draft day. And why is everyone concerned about maybe contingency plans for this evening?
So round one of the NFL draft is scheduled to begin at 5 p.m. local time. But we are under what's called a red flag warning from 11 a.m. until 8 p.m., which means strong winds, 20 to 30 miles per hour, gusts up to 40 miles per hour, as well as low humidity. Well, the stage where the NFL draft is set to begin is under the high roller observation wheel at the link. So it's outdoors, it's uncovered. But what I can tell you, this is the important part, is regardless of what happens weather-wise tonight, the show will go on. The NFL always has contingency.
All right, so the NFL, yes, always has contingency plans. But how funny would it be if for the first, like, really normal draft in a couple of years, it's supposed to be in beautiful Las Vegas, one of the cities the NFL wants to promote, and they have to, like, take it inside.
Will it blow Roger Goodell's hair off?
The toupee.
Is that a real hair? I believe it is a real bit of hair. So the other thing that I, at the very least, read about and don't know that this is still happening, but I would imagine that strong winds would affect this. I think what's happening is the players, when they are being announced, are supposed to get on like a little mini boat and go through the Bellagio pool. So I would imagine that if there's enough wind that it might make the boat rock. It might make the boat take a really long time to get from point A to point B.
So awkward.
So there might be just a long, awkward pause as we try to figure that out. So I'm all here for that especially as Roger Goodell like just stands there and tries to act like he's not a robot.
Right.
Hi, everybody. Yeah. Come on. Boo me.
Who will be, if there's a prospect that jumps in the water, who would that be? We don't know a lot of the personalities yet. I'd go with Sauce Gardner.
I didn't even think about
it. You know what I mean? Because if you really want to make a splash, if you really want to make a splash on national television, you dive, cannonball, do something into the fountain.
Tackle Goodell into the fountain. If that happens, I mean, that's the greatest draft of all time.
That's incredible. I think if you have a name like Sauce Gardner, to my point yesterday, you can get a little saucy and jump in the water some fun.
If he's going to be a little saucy, that means he's probably going to strip down to the old skivvies, I would imagine. That's actually saucy if we're going to be on brand. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
That a player might actually jump into the water. Why not? It's not like there's sharks in there.
I'm all for it. The NFL draft, of course, happening in Las Vegas, and the Houston Texans with that number 3 pick, and as of now, the number 13th overall pick as well. This is the first time the Texans have had high draft picks in years. And so this is going to be an exciting, despite Paul not liking the draft, this is going to be an exciting night.
I think that might be why I haven't really enjoyed it the last couple of years, because ever since the Deshaun Watson trade, which was, think about this, 5 years ago. That was a long, long time ago. That was in 2017. That was before the Astros had even won a World
Series. You mean
the
trade up to get Deshaun Watson?
Right.
Yeah.
That was 5 years ago. And then after that, you don't have any first-round picks. The last first-round pick that this team made was Tytus Howard. And I believe 2 years afterwards, or was it the 2 years before? No, yeah, the 2 years after and the 1 year before, they didn't have a first-round pick. And last year, they didn't even have a second-round pick. So now you're going to actually recognize perhaps some of the players that are going to be drafted. That's nice and all. And maybe I will fall back in love with the build-up to the draft again, but I doubt I will. I just want this thing to get over with.
Will Paul Gallant fall back in love?
No.
Period.
It's over.
We'll find that. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the latest rumors and reports as of today, draft morning. NFL Network and ESPN, of course, have guys here, boots on the ground. And we talk about some of those mock drafts as well. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
We're talking about celebrity lookalikes during the break. Somebody on Twitch said, my lookalike Olivia Wilde got served legal papers from Jason Sudeikis while she was on stage.
Right.
In front of industry executives.
Right on stage. It was pretty ballsy.
Is there a video of this?
I saw pictures of her holding a manila envelope, and that was what she had been served, I guess.
It's incredible.
Perhaps right before going on stage.
I love Jason Sudeikis, but I will not complain about being called Olivia Wilde, and that's the part because I'm selfish that I focus on.
See, yeah, you're only focusing on the part that you were compared to that. It's an actual brag. Good job by you looking like Olivia Wilde. I've been told that I look like James Vanderbeek.
You do.
I also look like, speaking of Jason Sudeikis and Ted Lasso, the guy who plays Roy Kent. I look like him, and I also look like Harry Ellis, who, if you watch the movie Die Hard, is the man infamously trying to negotiate with Hans Gruber to find where John McClane is, and then after taking a final sip...
I just pictured our John McClane.
No,
but
not
I know
that John McClane. No, I don't think he would fit in the vents. And as I took a sip of Coca-Cola trying to save the day from, you know, John McClane being a reckless cowboy, I was shot in the head. But I tried to save everybody in Nakatomi Plaza.
There's only room for one of us in this town, says John McClane, NFL media writer, who has also actually been in 8 movies.
I know.
He has been in a lot of movies.
He was in the movie with Selena
Longest
Gomez.
Longest Yard, right? And then
Spring Breakers is the one that you want to watch.
He was in I'm sure that's the one you want to watch.
Well, yeah. I like Spring Break.
It is Paul's favorite day of the week. It is NFL draft day, and this is the first one. I was just telling Paul that if you've covered the Texans for a while, where they have high draft picks, obviously, and that does make it a little more interesting for folks here in Houston, at least on a Thursday. Jim Trotter is in town to cover the Texans for NFL Network's coverage of the draft, And so he's had boots on the ground. I've seen him at the press conferences that have been here. Mm-hmm. And he had some interesting reporting. He had a conversation with Nick Caserio. And Caserio said there's a 99% chance that the Texans will use the number three pick rather than trading it. This is not a surprise.
Right.
Nick Caserio had talked about nobody really even being interested in that number three pick. And Adam Schefter had reiterated that a few days later with the reporting that everybody in the top five basically couldn't find suitors even if they were trying to shop that top five draft pick.
Yep.
He also said, Jim Trotter said 50 to 60% chance that they'll keep pick 13. It's basically could go one way or another.
That part is the interesting part. And yesterday when we had former GM Randy Mueller on, he had said, look, if you're a first-time general manager, you might feel pressure to get more picks or to make some big trade, to make some big splash, especially if you're picking with first-round picks for the first time. And this is Nick Caserio's first time in that boat. So I wonder if they're moving back, but more so I wonder if they would move up. And
fascinating.
From this perspective, who knows how the top three are going to play out? You could see Aiden Hutchinson go. You maybe see Aiden Hutchinson available to you. Maybe it's the same thing with Trevon Walker from Georgia. So maybe one of those pass rushers falls out of the top two spots and he's there for you. Are you going to say no there? Right now, a lot of the mocks have the Texans potentially taking a cornerback, specifically Derek Stingley has been the hot name of late. Well, say they decide not to take a corner at that spot. If they want a corner, whether it be Sauce Gardner or whether it be Derek Stingley after that third pick, they're going to have to trade back up. Those guys are going to be off the board by the time they pick at 13. So I'm curious to see if they would actually trade up, and they have the capital to do it. You have a ton of draft picks. You would be able to move potentially, if you had to, one of your second round picks to move up five, six spots or something like that. So I wonder about that. I think most of us would expect, though, to trade back. So if I had to put money on it, seeing as everything's in Vegas, I would probably put money on the Texans trading back. But I'm curious to see if they actually would be willing to trade up from that 13th spot for someone they might like.
I would not want them to do that because I would like them to have the higher draft picks next year or maybe even 2024 when maybe the Texans are more solid. And in this fantasy that I'm creating, Davis Mills ends up being a reliable quarterback, not fitting him for a gold jacket, just saying that he becomes a reliable quarterback. They draft some young guns. Lovie Smith gets his cornerbacks that he needs. And I would like to see the Texans move back. I'd like to see them trade away that 13th pick and get even more picks for years to come.
Okay. Well, it's great to have a ton of picks, but at some point you got to turn them into players. And what I've been getting a little bit uneasy with is the conversation that a lot of, I think, those who cover the Texans online have been having, which is, well, there's no point in bringing in real player X now, say Deebo Samuel, because you're not good now, and you're not going to be good for a while. And if you keep kicking the can down the road, okay, you might get more and more draft picks, you might get more swings at the pinata, if you will, but is there a lock that you will find somebody that can help you out? So I would wonder about that. And the second thing is, too, because they have so many picks, sure, Vanessa, the draft picks that they could trade to trade up might be in next year's draft, but it could be in this year's draft, too. And is it going to really hurt them if they potentially move one of their three picks in the first five picks in the first three rounds to move up a little bit? I don't think that kills them.
You can't save it all for a rainy day, for sure. I think when you look at the division that they're in particular, to your point, maybe that success of winning the division is not as far off as some of us are making it out to be. So get good players. Bring guys in there that can be the last one that gets you over the hump. Deebo Samuel certainly would be one of those guys, and we'll, of course, talk about that throughout the show because there's a little bit of news on that. Meanwhile, who will go first overall? It's so funny that between the NFL Combine and now, there have been no college games played, yet Aiden Hutchinson is now projected to maybe even fall to the Texans. All of a sudden, Trevon Walker maybe picked first. But then what about Ikey? What if somebody falls in love with Ikey Ekwonu? Who do you say, this is the loaded question of this year's draft, goes number one?
Well, it's hard now. I mean, I think if you're just reading the tea leaves, if Aiden Hutchinson, as our producer Sean Maves had pointed out a couple of days ago, is a Michigan guy, and Trent Baalke wants to stay away from Michigan guys because of his bat.
I love the tinfoil conspiracy theory. That was our messy draft. That was what drama do you want?
That is a fantastic, I think, just thought to put into play. So say they don't go with Aiden Hutchinson at one overall. They're not drafting a tackle because they just extended Cam Robinson this week. And Cam Robinson, for those who don't know, is the Jaguars' tackle who they've given the franchise tag a couple of times to. But no, they gave him an extension. I don't think the specifics of the extension are out there, but if you get that guy, then you know what you have as your starting left tackle. You're going to draft another tackle with that first overall pick. You're going to draft Ikem Ekwonu, who has moved up to now he and Aiden Hutchinson are at even odds as far as who would go first. Trevon Walker is -300. Ikem Ekwonu and Aiden Hutchinson are both tied at +350. So I feel it's going to be Walker first overall, at least just based off of everything that you're hearing. Usually the first overall pick is the one that gets leaked out before the start of the draft, whether it's a quarterback or something like this. And I think everything over the last couple of days has been building up to it's going to be Walker at one.
I was watching Sarah Walsh this morning, who covers the Jags for NFL Network, and she was talking about how she had conversations with Doug Peterson, Baalke, and that they really didn't give anything away. Now, you wouldn't necessarily expect them to, but when even Ian Rapoport and Adam Schefter don't have an answer at this point of who they're leaning towards, they don't even have that. I don't know if the Jags know. We've heard Shad Khan and Baalke may not agree with things, and then Doug Peterson, when he was with the Eagles, he always had a say on who the Eagles would draft. That's at least my understanding and what's been reported. So I do think it causes the question, raises the question of, do they even agree? And is it going to be one of those decisions to where they are fighting tooth and nail until a couple of minutes before, and then they say, all right, this is what we're doing, and it ends up being a Shad Khan decision because he's the one that writes the checks.
Yeah, and that would be very, very unfortunate, I think, for the Jaguars if they are still in a place where their owner, who failed with his last move, not Doug Peterson, Urban Meyer.
Right.
If I'm a Jaguars fan, I do not want Shad Khan touching this thing. And I understand the idea that an owner owns the team, has the ability to make whatever decision he wants because of private property, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All that crap. Because I know some of the capitalists out there are going to put that put that in the Twitch stream.
Everybody
put that on the text line.
At Gallant says, with your political opinions on capitalism, go.
Noted commie liberal, Paul Gallant here.
Chill, dog.
I just want to say on this front, you got to have owners who stay the bleep out of the business of building a football team. And that's where it got a little tricky when Jack Easterby was in charge, because it felt like Jack Easterby and Cal McNair were so tied at the hip.
Yeah.
In the past, I'm talking about, I don't think this is the case as much as it was in the past, where you would look at some of the decisions they were making and you're like, okay, this just feels like two guys making decisions that don't have as much insight as to the decisions that they should be making. They think they know more than they actually know. And I think that's a great strength in life to have, is to know what you don't know. I think that's why the Patriots stopped being a joke. Bob Kraft, instead of being meddlesome and basically driving Bill Parcells out in 1996, said, you know what, I'm going to take a back seat after Pete Carroll. I'm going to let Bill Belichick run things. He was obviously lucky, but I feel like being hands-off is good. And if Shad Khan is pushing for one specific player, if I'm Doug Peterson, if I'm Trent Baalke, I'm trying very hard to convince him otherwise. Listen to us. We know what we want. We know what we need. But if you want the Jaguars to suck, then go Shad Khan.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, Sauce Gardner telling NJ.com, I feel like I'm the chosen one. I feel like I'm the best in the draft. There's no doubt about it. No way I can be a bust. That shouldn't even be an option. Unfortunately, Sauce Gardner's statistics say otherwise. There are plenty of busts that are taken in the first round. Not saying I think he'll be one. He's been my choice of who I would love the Texans to take. But love the confidence. Got to believe in yourself.
If you're a corner, you have to have irrational confidence. You have to be completely nuts on that front. So I can understand it. He took some, I guess, subtle shots at Derek Stingley, too.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. He said he doesn't have the, I think he told Chancellor from KPRC2 that he doesn't have any of the off-the-field issues.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta love it. Love the smack talk, and hopefully we'll see more tonight. Okay, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, Texans first-round draft picks throughout the years. We go through the history. Let us remind you what has happened. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Ooh, great song by The King. Thank you for that good bump back music, Noah. It is NFL Draft Day. It is here. Paul's favorite day of the year.
What if Drake covered Elvis?
Nope. No.
Would you be cooler with Drake covering Elvis than Drake covering Michael Jackson?
I don't mind. Drake can cover whoever the hell he wants. I just need Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame not to say that Drake is the best artist ever, even over Michael Jackson. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. If he comes to Houston, we're going to have a talk in the locker room.
Okay.
And I'm going to have to introduce him to, I don't know, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, Bill Withers, Willie Nelson, any of the jazz artists, country artists that are better than Drake. It was a disturbing tweet.
Well, what if Drake tried country? You don't know that Drake wouldn't crush it at country.
Drake is good at mixtapes. Drake's a legend of our generation. You could say the songbird of our generation. Not better than Michael Jackson.
Just imagining him with the banjo. My name ain't nothing to y'all. Last name ever. First name greatest.
Oh, God. All right. The Texans have had some high draft picks over the years.
They haven't had any... You know
recently.
Why? They've been bad a lot.
Yes, they have.
Sadly. Oh, boy.
But we're going to go through and we're going to go back in time to some of the Texans' first round draft picks that they've had. And we're going to start out with some of the bigger ones, the most pressing and more important and more recent ones.
The more recent era. Because I think you can divide the Texans into two different eras. And sorry to make J.J. Watt sound like some sort of divine figure, but I think there is pre-Watt, and there is post-Watt. Because before J.J. Watt, this team had never made the playoffs. Before J.J. Watt, this team had never won the division. Before J.J. Watt, this team was, you know, just a struggling expansion franchise that had a couple of good years in terms of statistical production, but was never even a playoff team. After J.J. Watt, make the playoffs the first year, win a couple of division titles, obviously not as much as we would have liked to see. But I figured let's start off with the good era first, because if you really dive deep into the, you know, the other picks like David Carr and Mario Williams.
Yeah. I always think that, like, I see Jadeveon Clowney as being older than DeAndre Hopkins.
Mm-hmm, but he's not.
But he's not.
No.
He's very much not. So we begin with somebody that changed the franchise, somebody that people didn't really want the Texans to draft.
They booed the bleep out of him.
He still hasn't won a ring. He raised $37 million for the city of Houston after a hurricane. Ladies and gentlemen, Justin James Watt.
With the 11th pick in the 2011 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select J.J. Watt, defensive end, Wisconsin.
So that pick happens, and I remember, I think it was ABC 13 that put together the video package, and you see fans just booing the hell out of J.J. Watt right away. In fact, I was looking for online, Vanessa, some commentary from J.J. Watt from that moment. And I guess he sat down with Graham Bensinger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting hearing just the way that J.J. talked about it after the fact, where he essentially said that those moments, those people booing, like, he kept the video. I mean, he kept the video. I think that's
JJ
fantastic.
J.J. Watt is a keep the video for motivation kind of guy.
Why would you watch that?
Yeah, though? Yeah. Maybe before a game to get yourself hyped up. Some guys listen to music. Matt Stafford said he does not listen to music before games. Fun fact on Aaron Andrews and Carissa Thompson's Calm Down podcast. So I think that everybody has different methods. J.J. Watt strikes me as a guy before maybe one of those heated games against the Colts that would watch that and say, they don't know who I am.
Yes, 100%. While Meathead. Listening to Fort Minor and pushing a tire around, 8% hustle, 9% win, something, dedication and power.
We know how this ended up being just a legend in the city of Houston, not only on the field, but off the field, probably one of the most. I mean, he's up there with Altuve and Hakeem and all of the most loved and beloved athletes in Houston sports history with the 11th pick in the 2011 draft. I would love to, at some point, thinking outside the box, interview one of the scouts that from the Texans that watched J.J. Watt and evaluated him and what they saw in him. And I don't want the hindsight's 2020. We knew he would be a legend and get a gold jacket. I want, like, what were some of the raw things when you saw this Midwest kid from Wisconsin that made you pick him?
Well, the slipperiness. Look, that's what I always noticed with him. For being such a big guy, he was incredibly, I felt, cat-like in his ability to get through small places extremely quickly. Mm-hmm. That's not a skill that you would expect someone who's 6'4", 300 plus pounds to have. He was, I thought, for his size, just really, really quick. And that helped him. And obviously, he was strong too. But that quickness and his ability to shoot gaps and stuff, I've always been blown away by it. And it's a shame that he suffered some injuries because, you know, with the way that he started off his career before he finally got hurt, where, you know, approaching 20 sacks was the norm. You got to wonder where he would be on the all-time list, but obviously, because of that, he's probably never going to get that all-time sack record. But yeah, he's been, like, he's had a great career thus far. And you know, it's funny, you thought, because they didn't get Alden Smith, that it was going to be an absolute disaster. Remember, people wanted Alden Smith really badly, and he, you know, went to San Francisco instead. And look how that worked out. I mean, geez, that would be probably, we're talking about bust. Even if Alden Smith was a good player, my definition of bust is, can you be there for your team? Are you going to do a bunch of stupid stuff off the field? And that's what Smith did, and he's had plenty of opportunities to get back into the league.
We moved to 2013, the year I graduated high school. The Houston Texans drafted D-Hop, and it sounded like this.
With the 27th pick in the 2013 NFL draft, the Houston Texans select DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver, Clemson.
It's the best first-round pick of that draft.
Yeah, it was, and it was 27th. I always, in my mind, have it that the Texans drafted him a little bit higher, kind of like I have it in my mind that Jadeveon Clowney is older than DeAndre Hopkins. I always have it in my mind that DeAndre Hopkins was drafted a little bit higher. This is obviously one of the best decisions that the franchise made, only to have it pooped away 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. I honestly think it's the best pick that they've ever had.
Because, really? Even over Watson?
Well yeah, because Deshaun Watson, look, you traded up to make that pick, but you realize that all the quarterbacks are going to be off the board, and you got desperate, and you moved up. There is something to be said for standing your ground in the draft and taking a guy that obviously is a lot better than being the 27th overall pick. And if you take a look at the picks that were made before DeAndre Hopkins in this draft, I mean, it is nuts. Eric Fisher, Luke Jokel, Deion Jordan, Lane Johnson, Ziggy Ansah, Barkevious Mingo, Jonathan Cooper, Tavon Austin, Dee Milliner, and Chance Warmack. I don't know how many of those players outside of Lane Johnson are still in the league at this
Lane
point
Johnson
in time.
Yeah, Lane Johnson was with the Eagles, right?
Yeah. So Lane Johnson, of all of those top 10 picks, like, I'm pretty sure is the only one still in the NFL. I could be wrong on that. Maybe Chance Warmack's still in the league somewhere. But that is something else.
We all know what would happen with DeAndre Hopkins. He and Deshaun Watson absolutely electric together, giving this city kind of a breath of fresh air for the first time in a long time. We move on to 2014, Jadeveon Clowney drafted by the Houston Texans, and it sounded a little bit like this.
With the first pick in the 2014 NFL draft, the Houston Texans select Jadeveon Clowney, defensive end, South Carolina.
I got to say, with that pick, a lot of people are going to look back at it and say that was a failure of a pick. And I disagree. I think that Clowney was a very good player. Just wasn't great. At number one overall.
Always.
At number one overall, you want to find some sort of transcendent player. And I think there's a lot of parallels between Jadeveon Clowney and Mario Williams. Not entirely the same guys. I feel like with Mario Williams, there was questions about, though, how much he loves football. I remember that was something that was asked about Clowney. I don't feel like it's the same for the two of them. I think it's a lot more questionable with Mario than it was with Jadeveon Clowney, at least based off of all the stories that I have heard. But with Clowney, you had an elite run defender for a 4 or 5 year period, and he gave you good moments. You just chose not to give him the long-term extension, and that probably was the right decision. So he's a good player. Definitely could have done better with that first overall pick. No doubt about it.
He's always, and when you're the first round draft pick, if you're not great, when you're the first, and you're the first overall pick, right? When you're not great, he's had a good career, but he hasn't had a great career.
Right,
and I think he's a free agent right now. He was with the Seattle Seahawks, of course, as you know, in 2019, then Tennessee, and then spent a year at the Browns, and he's a free agent. He works out with Danny Arnold at Plex. Really, really nice guy. But when you're that first overall draft pick, the pressure's always going
to
be there.
I was part of that package deal to go to Seattle.
Really?
I'm not even kidding. The Jadeveon Clowney trade is the reason that I got a job in Seattle. I was talking about it over on the
SportsMap
Radio Network. I'm not kidding about that. The trade happened. It broke on the air. I talked about it from the Texans' perspective. I texted somebody in Seattle asking a question about, hey, what do you think about the guys that the Seahawks got in exchange? And that the Texans got in exchange. And the guy was like, well, why don't you talk about it from the Seahawks perspective? So I talked about it from the Seahawks perspective. And 1 week later, they flew me up for an interview. And then I was there for 2.5 years.
There you go. We moved to 2017, where Deshaun Watson drafted 12 overall.
With the 12th pick in the 2017 NFL draft, the Houston Texans select Deshaun Watson, quarterback, Clemson.
Mitch Trubisky drafted before Deshaun Watson, one of the great storylines from that draft. We know how this worked out. We followed the drama, but this was several people throughout the years, there's been narratives of who deserves credit for this. Was it Rick Smith that banged his fist on the table and demanded that they draft Deshaun Watson? Who knows? But regardless, great decision.
Yeah.
Football-wise, guys. Football-wise.
They got lucky. They got lucky, too, in that Mitchell Trubisky was off the board. Because one of those teams should have taken, honestly, I would say Watson out of that year's draft in that spot. I remember watching him in college and thinking to myself, I mean, this guy just is relentless. He's a Terminator. He beat Alabama. So what are we doing here? Mitchell Trubisky, a guy who played in the ACC at North Carolina. No offense to North Carolina football, but I mean, much like my own alma mater, Syracuse, they're an afterthought generally, except for they do better with the recruiting side of things. And Patrick Mahomes, too, not being taken second either.
Yeah,
That's a Kingsbury thing.
Yeah.
Right. I remember having extreme skepticism for Patrick Mahomes coming out, but I think it's very fair to point that all at Cliff Kingsbury these days.
When you look back on the Texans' first round draft picks, as we're doing throughout the day, you hope that maybe there's some repeated history with the decisions that they made with DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watson, some of those scouts still there. But a different general manager and definitely a different front office vibe and a different front office staff.
Everything's different
than before.
We have no idea how they view these picks and how they really prioritize position versus other positions. So it'll be definitely fascinating to see tonight.
Coming on, up on Vanessa and Gallant, speaking of Cliff Kingsbury, he will have his quarterback back in the picture. That's next.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I'm watching you squirm.
Yep. Yep.
My favorite.
Yep. We're talking about how I can't take compliments. We were on the air for that.
Paul.
I'm just like, just stop.
Sorry,
I'm bad at taking compliments. Vanessa's giving me compliments, and I'm like, stop it! I don't want to hear it!
The other day, I told him that he was just as good as another radio/TV personality. He's like, but I'm really not. I was like, okay.
What's funny, though, because generally the bravado, I exude the bravado outwardly, but inwardly.
Right, which is why I was shocked. I thought you'd be like, wow, thanks, Vanessa. No, yeah, I actually do think I'm as good as him. And you were like, but I'm not.
Massive fraud. Paul Gallant here, not believing anything he says or believing in himself either. It's fine. I don't need a therapist. We're good.
I am your therapist.
Yeah,
and I'm honored. Meanwhile, the Arizona Cardinals, speaking of some of Paul's favorite people.
Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray is back. They locked him in on his fifth-year option. And look, we thought that this would happen. We knew that Kyler Murray was blowing smoke when he demanded a new contract, more money, etc. His agent, Eric Burkhart, released the awkward letter with all capital letters and some grammatical errors. But Kyler Murray will be back with the Cardinals. And now, of course, he's doing the whole thing where he's doing the emoji eyes and the 100 and or 100.
Lazy damage control, essentially. Right.
Acting like he never complained.
Thumb damage control. He did complain. They will be back at this spot next year. The Cardinals just had all the leverage because they can give him the fifth-year option and he doesn't really have a say there. It's whether or not they pick it up or not. And why would you want to give Kyler Murray, a guy who has had problems with being 100% at the end of the season, why would you want to give him a lot of money long-term when you're not 100% sure how this whole thing is going to pan out for him? And I don't know how it gets better for Kyler Murray necessarily in the future, because it does feel like we have seen the exact same thing 3 years in a row. Maybe if we're talking about a college football length season where there's 10 games, 11 games, 12 games, maybe there's a little bit less of a probability of Kyler being banged up at the end of the season. But we have seen the exact same thing 3 years in a row now, where during the last couple of weeks of the year, Kyler Murray has not been 100% or has missed games entirely. And if you're a team like the Cardinals, who are in a pretty tough division in the NFC West, even if the rest of the NFC has gotten a little bit easier, you got to know that you have more than a 14-13 game quarterback if you feel really good about paying him whatever the next big quarterback contract is going to be, which I'd imagine would eclipse Patrick Mahomes in some way, shape, or form.
Look, I want Kyler Murray to do well. He's a Texas kid. He's got, you know, a few local ties. And I certainly want J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins to do well in Arizona. So I want the Cardinals to be good. I want them to enjoy some success and be able to finish a season, which they weren't able to do last year.
I kind of don't.
I want that.
I kind of don't.
I'm not saying what you want. I'm saying what I want.
Okay, that's what you want. Okay,
yes.
Fair enough.
And I like how the Cardinals handled this. I do. They basically did this. Cliff Kingsbury stayed very professional. When he did talk about it in press conferences, he said, hey, we're on good terms. We text about football. It's a football relationship. So Cliff Kingsbury stayed professional, and the team really didn't respond. And you know what they ended up doing? Saying, we have the leverage. You don't. You're under contract. That's not going to change. Pick up the fifth-year option, and then you can complain next year, buddy.
Showing restraint sucks, though. Gets you places in life.
It does.
It still sucks.
I am not often good at it.
Nor am I. I've gotten better.
I think it gets better with age.
I would agree with you there, especially with just dealing with everything that's been going on at my apartment complex. And now that
Paul's on a journey with his apartment complex.
Well, I found out that yesterday from Wine Wednesday, and sorry for the personal story for just a brief moment.
No,
but
get into
The reason that I have not been getting my packages, even though they have been marked as delivered, is because the U.S. Postal Service worker who is in charge of delivering packages to my apartment complex lost the key to the mailroom and refuses to replace it, and apparently has been putting in different excuses like animal interference as far as why he can't complete deliveries, until just outright lying about the deliveries. So I found this out yesterday.
You're getting robbed.
I went to my leasing office yesterday first, and they said, look, you have a lot of issues with our apartment. And they are granted. We're just telling you that the post office thing is not our problem. And I was like, okay. So I called the USPS and they were like, yeah, this is crazy. They even told me, they're saying, we have no idea why there are so many attempted deliveries with these packages. But apparently there have been like 10 attempted deliveries in the last 10 days for these two packages that they have marked as delivered. And then I went to the actual post office itself. And this lady, he was like, yeah, I don't know what this guy's deal is, but he's saying animal interference. She thought it was hilarious that the guy was saying animal interference as far as what packages not being delivered. So anyway, that's what I'm dealing with. Who cares?
Let me tell you about my package. So I had a guy...
tell us about your package.
I had a guy send me a package. This guy likes me. We've never dated, but he sent me flowers before or whatever. So he sent me a package, but he sent it to the wrong apartment number.
Oh, no.
So he texts me, and he's like, did you get the package I sent you? And I was like, no, I didn't. And he told me which apartment number, and I was like, well, that's the wrong apartment number. So now I'm in this position. Do I go to that apartment number and say, hey, like, I know you have a package that was delivered for me. It says...
Ooh, that's awkward.
Right? I know you're either opening my mail or stealing from me because it said, now, while it might have been the wrong apartment number, this man does know my name. So it was addressed to me.
Go to the leasing office first.
Okay.
And then ask them, hey, can you talk to them for me? Because I think that they have a package that was intended for me. And then it'll get a little bit awkward, of course. But that way, you're not firsthand knocking on the door saying, give me my package!
Yeah, I don't want to get shot.
Like you're Jack Bauer or
something.
That
would happen to me. Speaking of awkward, Doc Rivers, I understand sticking up for yourself, but he had a very interesting soundbite yesterday that has made its rounds on the internet.
Well, it's easy to use me as an example, but I wish y'all would tell the whole story with me, all right? My Orlando team is the HC. No one gives me credit for getting up against the Pistons who won the title. That was an HC. Go look at that. I want you to go back and look at that roster. I dare you to go back and look at that roster, and you would say, what a hell of a coaching job. Really. I mean, the Clipper team that we lost 3-1. Chris Paul didn't play in the first two games and was playing on one leg. And we didn't have home court. And then the last one, to me, is the one we blew. That's the one I said, we blew that. Now, it was in the bubble. And anything could happen in the bubble. There's no home court. Game 7 would have been in L.A., you know. But it just happens. So I would say with me, some of them is I got to do better always. I always take my own responsibility. And then some of it is circumstances happen. You know, this one, let's win it, and we don't have to talk about it.
I've always liked Doc Rivers because he won a championship with the Celtics in 2008, and he was a part of those basketball teams that I just loved with such a passion. But, dude, come on, man. Ignore this. Someone asks you the question. Say, that's the past. It has nothing to do with their situation right now. When you do this, you just sound like a loser. You do. That's excuses. And you might be right in some of those situations, but you were up 3-1 with Orlando. Are you essentially saying, yeah, that team sucked. We shouldn't have been up 3-1. That was my job. That was the reason that we had the series lead. Me alone. That's too much.
I think that there are times when coaches go in front of the media and they have not taken a deep breath and done their Zen prayer or meditation. And here's the thing, I get it. You have emotions and you want to stand up for yourself. He probably remembers every roster he's been on and why certain things haven't worked out, whether it's an injury, a diva, player, you know, something happening. But while it makes for entertainment for the general public, in your own interest, if you are a GM, a coach, and you know that you're riled up and you're defensive, take a step back, drink your tea, do whatever you need to do.
Don't have rabbit ears, too. These guys all talk about how they don't pay attention to the national narratives. And they all do. Don't do it. It's not healthy, especially if you're a coach. Because you're constantly going to be criticized for every single thing that is a failure by your team. And you will never be given any credit for any of the successes if you're a coach. There is no point in listening. And clearly Doc Rivers listens.
Coming up on Vanessa and Glant, you know what day it is. It's Thursday. The Astros play. Oh, and it's draft day for the NFL. We're going to talk about it all coming up next.
Stay up to date with the latest innovations hitting the city of Houston by visiting innovationmap.com or follow them on any of your social media platforms. Just search Innovation Map.